And who better to start the introduction or meeting than Professor Dick Kovac from University of Indiana. He's the vice president of the college and the chair of the Science and Quality Committee of the college.
So thanks. I'm Dick Kovacs, and I have the honor of being able to kick this off with sort of a TED Talk. And this will be available on the ACC website as a podcast or a live stream, sort of a podcast. It won't be available through the standard podcast, but the ACC is looking to try to make these sort of talks more available to you. And I say it's sort of a TED Talk because I may pull out a few notes from my pocket from time to time. First of all, I want to thank Anna, I want to thank Bonnie, I want to thank the ACC staff for allowing me to come and talk a little bit about the road to cardio-oncology care. But I wanted to relate the title. I was asked to talk about a road. And so I'm going to talk a little bit about three aspects that I think are related to a road. One is the length of that road and the traffic on that road. The second are the intersections with that road. And the third, at least in the Midwest these days, are the potholes on that road. In pre-questions, many of you were asked how long you've been at this. So I wanted to relate my very first intersection with cardio-oncology, which was in 1983, at a clinical pathologic conference at the Krannert Institute of Cardiology where I was training. And this was a standard CPC, and it presented the case of a 44-year-old woman who had been admitted to our arrhythmia service with an incessant ventricular tachycardia. And that woman obviously did not do well. She came to post-mortem examination, and Bruce Waller was our pathologist, double-boarded at that time, and Bruce was presenting the case. And as it was wont, the clinical information, the imaging, the electrocardiograms were presented, and the faculty, as they are wont to do, opined on the case in terms of what they thought was going on. Our director at that time was Charlie Fish. Charlie was an electrocardiographer and an astute clinician and an astute observer. And as Charlie was wont to do, he let the faculty opine, and then just as Bruce was about to present the gross pathology, Charlie raised his hand. And he said, "The diagnosis is breast cancer." And the room went silent, and people asked why, and Charlie said, "Well, I looked at her electrocardiogram, and she had a pattern of pathologic Q waves that did not correspond to any known coronary distribution." And he said, "Oh, I think she's had direct myocardial metastasis. And she's 44, and she's a woman, and I just sort of picked the most common cancer in that age group." And he was right. An astute observer from out of the field made the correct diagnosis. And I sort of filed that away for now for 30-plus years, but I think of the challenges that I faced just rounding this week at the Simon Cancer Center at IU when I was faced with how to deal with a reactive pericarditis in a patient who just had an esophagectomy for esophageal cancer. And I was asked how to manage the anticoagulation in a patient who had lymphoma replacing his interatrial septum and had fenestrated the interatrial septum. So the challenges that you all are facing are broad. And part of my vision of this road is that this is long and full of traffic. So 15 million. So 15 million cancer patients in the United States. 15 million cardiovascular patients in the United States. Risk factors: sedentary lifestyle, obesity, diabetes, hypertension, tobacco use, common to both. So the opportunities for this road, the start of this road, is going to begin with those in this room that are going to begin with the primary prevention. We're going to see recommendations for prevention. We're going to see recommendations for activity. Every 15 minutes of physical activity in the nurse's health study reduces cancer risk by 1%. And how that blends with our recommendations for 4 for 40. 40 minutes of vigorous exercise four times a week for cardiovascular disease. And the road begins even earlier than that. You're going to hear about the relationship with pediatric oncology and a conversation that I have frequently with Jamie Renbarger from the Riley Hospital at IU, who impresses on me the development of hypertension in the survivors of pediatric cancers and their progression to a variety of cardiovascular diseases. So the road is long. The road has a lot of traffic. The intersections on this road, are going to be many. And I think one of the challenges, and I'm very, very happy to see the team care members here, the APPs, the aspects of team care within the cardiovascular team that are going to be so important for this field to go forward. But more than that will be the issues of our other intersections. I mean, we're now getting used to working with oncologists, but many of us are not used to working with radiation oncologists, surgical oncologists. There is going to be the intersection with our societies. Increasingly, collaboration between the societies, the American Society of Clinical Oncology, for example, so that we speak a common language, so that our definitions of clinical toxicities are understandable on both sides of the fence. That's going to be an important intersection. But I want to diverge for a little bit and give you another intersection that may make you a little bit uncomfortable. And I've been likened a little bit to that uncle that you invite for Thanksgiving dinner and sits down at the table, and you never know quite what they're going to say. So, but I want to talk about an important interaction in drug development. In the 1990s, there were a number of drugs that were removed from the market because of safety signals in something that I do for a living, and that's proarrhythmic effects of non-antiarrhythmic drugs. People may remember Seldane. Killed people. QT prolongation. So how was that whole issue solved? That issue was solved by the coming together, by the intersection of academics, the pharmaceutical industry, and the regulators. Actually, there's an entity here in Washington, D.C. that sponsors a cardio-oncology, has had cardio-oncology roundtables called the Cardiac Safety Research Consortium, that serves as an umbrella to bring these entities together. Because I would submit to you that the identification of safety signals in oncology drugs begins well before the first doses are put into man. In the QT world, what happened with the Cardiac Safety Research Consortium was that a consensus document was produced. Preclinical and clinical data were standardized. Issues were discussed. And if you want to study this, there's a document called the ICH E14 that outlines the definitions and how you assess the risk for these drugs at every stage of development. One of my references will be a study that I was privileged to take part in at Eli Lilly. I worked at Eli Lilly for a number of years, so I have some knowledge of the pharmaceutical industry. We were allowed, from the first dose in man, to study a compound for cancer with a comprehensive safety profile, including biomarkers, imaging, and careful clinical assessment and hemodynamic assessment in these patients, so that the entire lifespan of the drug can be identified, so that safety signals can be identified early on this road. So I would urge you all to look at that intersection and what can be done with the combination of academics, industry, and the regulators. And if you want to follow the QT story, that has now evolved into Ray Woosley's site from the University of Arizona, now called Credible Meds, but used to be called qtdrug.org, which compiles this information in a usable format so that one can look at the toxicities of non-cardiac drugs with proarrhythmic effects. Your space, much, much more complicated. There's another important intersection, and that is the intersection of how we diffuse our information, both in the cardiology community and the oncology community. And if you are not aware of it, there have been wonderful, wonderful articles. Val Fuster has committed to this in the Journal of the American College of Cardiology, a wonderful two-part article that I'll have the reference for at the end in the November issue outlining strategies for care of the cardio-oncology patient. Pretty happy. There's a little box in there on QT prolongation, if you're not familiar with the electrophysiology of some of these drugs, recommending evidence-based ways to both measure and correct for the QT. But that's a niche idea. But the point is that the JAC has now committed to presenting these in a very good format. The Basic and Translational Sciences JAC subjournal there's also a wonderful review that I'll post at the end on the evaluation of safety signals in the era of individualized therapy. Must reading for you. So the intersections are many. Occasionally these intersections will be surprise intersections. And the surprise intersection that I wanted to mention was the CANTOS study, where the intersection of a drug being used for the prevention of cardiovascular disease by its anti-inflammatory processes, oh, by the way, shows a reduction in cancer mortality. So the last part of this road that I wanted to cover were the potholes. And the potholes are significant potholes. Number one, the complexity of the patients and the complexity of the therapies in this day and age now may seem overwhelming. And that's why you're all here. And that's why you packed the house yesterday to come and identify, do I have the proper base for understanding cancer chemotherapies, but also cancer surgical therapies and cancer radiation therapies and long-term outcomes of pediatric cancers. So these patients are complex. There is increasing individualization of the care so that these patients each are their own unique entity. And that is a great challenge. There is an enormous challenge with longitudinal data, with being able to identify these patients and follow them over time in ways that we have not, as cardiologists, done in the past. We look at 30-day mortalities. We look at in-hospital mortalities. Sometimes we look at 5-year mortalities. Do we look at lifetime mortalities? Common terminology, simply identifying and speaking a common language between the cardiologist and the oncologist in terms of toxicities, and toxicities in clinical trials is another challenge. And what talk could we give without the challenges that we face in our electronic health records, with interoperability, with transfer of the care of these patients from specialist to specialist over very, very long periods of time? I hope that will be a discussion. And research. The research is key, and the development of the research basis. Only 2% of you, according to your survey, were here to learn clinical investigation, and I would hope that would get larger. Searching clinicaltrials.gov, I found about 175 trials related to cardio-oncology, 75% of them outside of the United States. The TITAN trial for the evaluation of team care in the care of the cardio-oncology patient at the University of Alberta. 75% out of the U.S. Hopefully, we will get much of that back into the U.S., but also for the 22% of you, I think, that are international, also the ability to bring that all under one umbrella worldwide. So imagine a world where knowledge and innovation will optimize the cardiovascular care and outcomes of our patients. It's been said that imagine is the most powerful word in the English language, but imagine that. Imagine that your knowledge and your innovation will optimize the care of these patients and their outcomes. I didn't make that statement up. That statement is the vision of the American College of Cardiology. Part of that knowledge and innovation and part of that inculcation into the college is the section related to cardio-oncology. How many are members of the section? I asked for a count, and there were currently 440 members of the section. You now have 441, and I will join. In fact, I've already joined. And I hope that all of the rest of you will join the section because it exists to bring people together within the college with common interests and common aspirations, to bring forth that knowledge and that innovation to improve the care of your patient. So with that, I want to thank the organizers for the meeting. I want to thank the college and its staff who make these things happen. And I look forward to learning with all of you for the rest of the day.